Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
BashaniRadio.com is global. You can listen on any computer or mobile device that connects to the internet. Simply go to BashaniRadio.com and click on the show you would like to hear. Then sit back and enjoy yourself with powerful and positive talk radio. BashaniRadio.com, New York City. Always talking about everything.
Welcome to the Cash Flow and Comedy, the No More Broke Radio Excuse Show. Featuring the funding guy, Edward Felder. Sit back, banish all your excuses, and be inspired by the riveting stories of entrepreneurial success that'll have you laughing out loud all the way to the bank.
Thank you for tuning in to Cash Flow and Comedy, the No More Broke Excuse podcast, heard on Bashani Radio and worldwide on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Ed Felder, the funding guy. Before we introduce our amazing special guest today, we're going to kick the show off like we always do with our No More Broke Excuse motivational thought of the day. Our thought comes from the late, great Sammy Davis Jr., who once said, "You always have two choices, your commitment versus your fears." Similar to our guest, his belief was, to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice victory. I like the title of today's episode, The Renaissance Man. Our guest today is a New York City classically trained singer who also trained with Alvin Ailey and was awarded a scholarship from the Dance Theater of Harlem. How about that? He's wowed audiences as part of the Michael Jackson tribute tour. The Village Voice called today's guest a great voice, a triple threat, and a supernatural force not to be overlooked. Yep. While he has performed in London, Los Angeles, and hopes to one day sell out in Lagos, Nigeria, one of his biggest kicks has been performing in the New York City subways. Asked to recall one of his most memorable performances, he'll likely whisper, it was the impromptu breakdancing battle he had with an armed, on-duty New York City police officer off of 42nd Street. The YouTube clip of the officer and our guests spinning on their necks and then ending in a ridiculous one-hand handstand has garnered nearly 4 million YouTube views. I'd like to welcome to the stage Mr. Marquise Mark, one of the brightest entertainers to take a bite out of the Big Apple in decades. Marquise, thank you for taking a break from your stage, and I think you're in Honolulu, Hawaii, to be a special guest on the Cash Flow and Comedy Christmas show. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. I'm blessed. I woke up this morning. I gave my praise. I said thank you. And now I'm looking for some more folks to serenade.
Serenade. Listen, we are here. Just imagine 1 million of your closest friends, many from New York City. So listen, sit back, relax, listeners, and let's get it in. Hey, before we get into our amazing story, your amazing life, I'd love for you to bless our audience with a few bars of, say, New York, New York by Frank Sinatra. Then maybe hit us with a bit of your favorite Christmas carols just to get the show kicked off. You know, that's the least you can do, since many of our listeners and our audience are suffering in sub-freezing temperatures while you're likely dipping your toes in the sky blue water on the beach somewhere. How about that? So, listen, just hit us with, you know, I'm from New York, you're from New York, we have 500,000 listeners in Brooklyn. Hit us with a New York, New York. Do you mind? Can you hook us up?
No problem, buddy. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York, I want to wake up in a city that never sleeps. And find I'm king on the hill, top of the heap. Now for the one I've been having on repeat in Honolulu, and it's been working. The crowds have been loving it. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody in Hawaii knows a turkey and some mistletoes helped to make Hawaii and NYC bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, we'll find it hard to sleep on this amazing show.
Oh, that is awesome, man. Listen, I hate to put you on the spot, but I had to do it, man. Thank you for thrilling us. Listen, so you swing all around the world. You sing, I guess, restaurants and everywhere from stadiums and studios. You're just blessing the world. And so a lot of your stuff is impromptu. Is that correct?
I sing. I mean, it's almost been 20 years doing a lot of just the streets and the stage. Like New York City, sometimes you have to. Like things would happen in the middle of me performing or dancing in Times Square or dancing on the train. And I always had to go around and not like offend my crowd or offend anyone and just... It came, and it's been a blessing, because now that I've got like a hang of it, like folks, it's have been comparing me, the comparisons and the compliments have just been a blessing, just a complete blessing.
I could throw out one of my favorite Christmas songs, "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus." Could you just hook us up with that a little bit?
Sure, I'll do as much as of the words that I can.
Let's go.
So mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath a palm tree in Hawaii. She was with her boyfriend, he was new. Might have been Santa Claus, you never know. I saw mommy kissing Santa
Yo, you just blessed it with the vocals. Now let's hear your golden story. From what everything I've read, you started your career performing in the New York City subways at the age of 6 years old. How did you begin your career performing in the subway?
Well, it was a little later than that. I started in Queens. My mother had me in ballet at six, and it was 14 years old that I, the year 2000, like right before the towers came down. I came back from Atlanta, Georgia, and my cousins had hit me with an opportunity that they were doing in the New York City subways. They were selling candy on the train. And me wanting to pick up some extra money, I was like, sure, like let's do it. And next thing you know, I was on the 4, 6, and the 2 train selling candy and using everything that I've learned from dance or just being in front of a crowd to speak and be a salesman to the public of New York City. from eighth grade all the way up until like as up until this year that I was doing. I started breakdancing because I was in with a lot of performers out there, and I didn't know that the performers were making like bank triple compared to what, you know, somebody with merchandise is able to make, because you have to buy the merchandise and then you have to resell the merchandise. And then once I started breakdancing, it was another a whole new world. And then music just took it to, it's been a blessing since I added the music on top of the dance.
So let me get this straight. So you're singing at 14 years old, and you're doing breakdancing, and you're classically trained in singing, and you did some stuff with Alvin Ailey. But now you're making from 14, 15, to 16, you're making, how much money are you making in this New York City subway system?
Well, four boxes of candy would get me $200. I would buy four boxes. Or let's say I would buy one box, I'd spend $17 and get 50 back, because you'd get 48 pieces in a box, and I would always round it to 50 because we'd always get donations. So I'd, you know, spend about almost $90 and make 200. And I would average between 2 to 4 boxes a day.
So you're making that type of change. Now, how do you transition from doing candy to delight in the world with your vocals and your dancing?
I remember a friend, I still remember his name to this day, Tito, and his son would dance on the trains. And every now and then I wouldn't have like a re-up money to buy candy. So he would allow me to hold his radio and be what they call a yo man. And in exchange, at the end of the night, he would bless me with enough money to buy some candy. And then finding out and going cart to cart and seeing what they were doing, I was like, this is what I do. Like, this is, and I couldn't believe like they were making that much money, like just free of just all donations. All they spent was battery and every now and then a radio. So it took me some time to gather the courage up to go out there and do it. And yeah, next thing you know, I was out there selling candy and dancing. And then eventually I dropped the candy completely and I was just dancing.
So walk me through, why did you choose this? How was your home structure? Did you have to work or did you have to hustle? Why did you start going on the subway anyway?
Definitely had to work. My home structure was just, I had my mother and my father in my life, and they've been separated since a little boy. And my father, he worked and he did the best that he could for the both of us. And we were like in transit sometimes, or like periods that I can remember. And then I would go like down south because my mother was in the service, and then out of the service, and then back in the service. And she would do a lot of moving. And then coming back to New York, I just wanted the additional funds and resources, and didn't want to put a strain on my father. So it was simple for me to go out there and make some candy money. And then once I got the hang out of it, the whole neighborhood, everyone, himself included, was like, well, you know what, you're good. Like, you don't even necessarily need my support besides, you know, me signing you in school and doing certain parental things. But as far as an allowance or financial support, he was able to, you know, kind of have a little more freedom now because I was providing for myself.
Listen, at the peak of your teenage years, how much money were you bringing in on the subways?
Man, it had to have been between $5 to $1,000 a week. It was like any I would say like any other story, of a young adult as an entrepreneur. Like, it was coming in so fast and I was spinning it and feeling like Richie Rich and just still going to school and like maintaining like a decent average in school. But again, it gave me so much responsibility, and it pretty much turned me at 14, 15, 16, 17. It turned me into a young adult, like really, really fast.
Tell me about your first performance. Do you remember what it was? Outdoors. What song was it? And how did the crowd react?
I remember going out and singing My Girl with a young lady named Bubbles. And we would go cart to cart and sing My Girl. And folks was really responding to us and tipping us. I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. I guess you say, what can make me feel this great? Some candy. Used to sling that candy on the subway to all the girls.
So how much money did you earn during your first singing performance on the A-Train?
Well, that first experience, I'll never forget it. So we was putting all the money in the bag, I mean, in a hat. I didn't even get to calculate what it was. But I do remember, again, like I said, I'll never forget, Bubbles said she lost the hat. She lost the hat. And then that's what ended that experience. I didn't, you know, sing on the streets with her anymore. And I took a break from singing on the streets, period, then. Because the money just mysteriously disappeared.
Well, and so the hat was full. So since that time, you've gone solo on the singing. For the people who haven't seen your videos that have gone viral, I was perplexed to see you. So now you're a classically trained dancer, but now you're one of those people who swing on the bars. You're doing 360s, 6 feet, 7 feet, 10 feet in the air on top of the subway while the subway system is going 50, 60 miles per hour. How do you handle that?
Sir.
And what made you think that you can do that? And how did you not kill yourself doing it?
Well, to be honest, I've always been an acrobat since a young man. And again, like I said, I started with just dance choreography and then some freestyling. And then I would get into the acrobats. And then I remember 1 year working with these two amazing guys, Elijah and Joshua. And Joshua used to do this pole trick on the train called an invert. And then I started, we went to the park and we trained, and then I started doing an invert. And then I created another trick that was similar to kind of what they do in pole dancing. And next thing you know, we would incorporate pole dancing and just pole acrobatics on top of our dance choreography, on top of our acrobatics and the break dancing. And just so we can stand out amongst all of the other performers, because at the time, all of the other performers were just break dancing or just doing hip hop and getting light. By me and him doing pole acrobats, you wouldn't believe, like, and I actually have dates on some of the video in the footage when we were doing this stuff. It started a whole culture, a whole generation behind us. And now I've watched some of their shows, and a lot of them went viral too and have been on the news. And a lot of times they kind of taken a bulk of the dance out of their shows. And it's predominantly them swinging on the poles now based off of the new structures of the trains. most of their show is on the pole. And I was like, Elijah, have you checked out what they're doing in New York? Do you see what has happened and what we sparked? Because again, at the time when we were doing stuff on the pole, there was like one flip that the breakers before us used to do on the train. Outside of that, there was no, or maybe like a spin, like being silly, but there were no like acrobatics or any actual stunts on the poles, like on the trains. And I'm proud to say and proud to have documentation that we influenced like a lot, and it even went all the way up into the MTA transit, and they were like putting signs and saying, hey, this is getting out of hand. Kids from all over the world and all over Brooklyn and Harlem, they're just all over the place spinning on poles, and they started putting signs up and putting it on the news and cracking down and putting like other units out there to, you know, cut down on the performing. Man, it's been history. It's been really history, because I did not know how many folks that we would reach.
In addition to being classically trained in dancing and vocals, I did see another video of yours that went viral. This time, I think you were on the 67th floor of the Rockefeller Center Plaza. Tell us about what happened then and what the response was then.
That was a cool gig. That was an amazing gentleman. I think his name was Radu, Radu or something like that. He found my footage and my work online, and he wanted to surprise his wife and propose to her at Top of the Rock. And I've never been to Top of the Rock and didn't even know that it existed. I know about Rockefeller Center, but I didn't know that, you know, that building in itself goes like almost 70 stories in the sky. And so he told me about what he wanted to do. He booked me a ticket. He booked her a ticket. He booked himself a ticket. And then I met up with him at Rockefeller Center. And like the whole time, he was just like texting me and really secretive about it. And she didn't know anything about it. And he wanted to surprise her. No one knew anything about it besides me and him. So we get up there, and he's like, okay, now, because it was really secretive, and like the timing was like just kind of planned, but almost improv, because security, as you can see at the end of the video, once they saw what was happening, was like, hey, you guys, you know, you got a whole crowd now. You're like 70 stories in the sky, and I'm singing John Legend's All of Me, and he's proposing and surprising her. And she's now breaking down and crying. And then eventually security came and was like, hey, you guys, you know, you can't be doing this. And then by then, I stopped singing, and he continued to propose. And she said yes, and the crowd went crazy. And that was an amazing gig.
Listen, do you think your singing had anything with her saying yes? And if you could hit us with a bar or two when he was kneeling down, I'd love to hear it. Our entire audience would love to hear it.
Okay. I now to just sit here and remind me about it. Maybe I did have a little to do with that amazing couple being married to this day, because he worked. That was a surprise. And you can't go wrong with live entertainment today. 2018, you cannot go wrong with a live vocalist. Like, I feel like we're almost male vocalists. We're almost extinct and classically trained, or to have that soul, that passion, that oomph. Like, not just, oh, I can sing, oh, I went to school, or I can sing, or I learned on YouTube to sing, but to have that, what we, you know, what any of the legends had. And it didn't come always from just school. It came from life experiences. But to give you a little bit of John Legend's All of Me, and I'm going to sing it a little lower right now because I'm still a little breached or fatigued from yesterday's Christmas caroling. But what would I do without your smart mouth? Drawing me in and you kicking me out. You've got my head spinning. No kidding, I can't pin you down. What's going on in that beautiful mind? I'm on your magical mystery ride. And I'm so dizzy, don't know what hit me, but I'll be all right.
Woo! And she said yes to both of you guys. So
thank
now you sung on Rockefeller Center Plaza on the 67th floor. People got married. You have a nice little stint at the Apollo Theater. Tell us about that.
Oh, the Apollo was cool. I actually got to do the Apollo, I think twice as a dancer, if I can remember. We did a Christmas show there, the Black Nutcracker with Uptown Dance Academy. And then I did another dance performance there with a company. Can't really recall the name of it. And then I did Amateur Night twice. And the first time I sang, I sing and dance both times. The first time I sing and danced to Otis Redding's These Arms of Mine. And then the second time I did a remix to New York, New York. We did it original, and then he mixed a little house into it. And I danced in between and then went into singing. And that was an amazing experience. The producers there, Kathy Williams, knows me personally from just over and over and over going and auditioning to be a part of that the stage, and just not just Amateur Night, but I told her, you know, I'll do, you know, anything in terms of performing in the venue, because it's legendary, and just the energy alone of being there is like is an accomplishment. So when she see me like the second time singing the standards in Sinatra, It was a win-win. Like, I think they at the time were doing, Apollo on Broadway, and then they had canceled the Apollo on Broadway, and just was like, keep them. Let's just bring them to Amateur Night. And then I got there and was doing that. And she would always ask me. She was like, Mark, you have an amazing voice. Why are you like flipping and dancing and doing all of the extra stuff? Why don't you just sing? And I was like, you know what, Miss Kathy, I just wanna give a full show. I wanna entertain my crowd. It hadn't dawned on me that, you know, I've been influenced so heavily by Sammy Davis Jr., Michael Jackson, James Brown, and you know, I was at one point more of an experienced and confident dancer than I was a vocalist. It took me over 20 years, over 20 something years of my life to have the confidence and the courage to just open my mouth and say, you know what, I'm going to just sing. And at that particular point, I got up with a gentleman named Albert Rose, who was a really big classical singer out of Europe, and also was a big professor at Brooklyn School of the Arts or BAM. I think Brooklyn, there's a music school big in Brooklyn. Can't remember the exact name, BSA or BAM, one of them. And he's not with us anymore. Rest in peace, Mr. Rose. But he started working with me in 2011. And he would give me an hour and that was so kind of him, because I couldn't even really afford to compensate him or pay him, but he would still give me an hour a week and just work with me. And I would still dance on the trains and wouldn't really sing besides like training. And as time went by, I started to utilize it more and more and more. And that's when it kicked in for me.
Now you are beloved worldwide. Have you ever done Vegas? Do you have your own show? What was your vision at the peak of your career?
I've definitely had a platform based off of the internet and based off of New York City showing love. Folks really don't understand how the population of New York City and being 8 million, whether you are on a Broadway stage or a Jazz Lincoln Center or anywhere, if I'm estimating and seeing like 10,000 people a day in the public, in their eyes, whether they acknowledge a tip or not, that is a lot of people to be covering on a daily basis. And word gets around. Word of mouth does get around. And then when folks see you again and again and again, and it didn't dawn on me until 17, 15 years later, folks everywhere I go is like pointing me out everywhere I go. From upstate, I'm even in Hawaii, seeing folks that I've seen that see me perform personally and live on the subways in New York City. So the reach is just a blessing. It's worldwide because of, you know, tourism in, you know, New York City having a huge local population. So folks would see me right on the streets and book me for their weddings, book me to do their, for the past 2 years, I was doing New Year's Eve out in Greenport, Long Island. And also Jazz Lincoln Center. I met the vice president at Jazz Lincoln Center, and she had me performing at Lincoln Center on 59th Street, Columbus Circle. And she seen me performing on the One Train and couldn't believe, a lot of folks, you know, sometimes don't even believe that it's my voice or that I'm actually, you know, out there singing. And it's not even just about the tips at this particular point. This is my calling. So I love what it does for people and to make folks feel better, because life is amazing. Because you're going to have probably over a million folks like, hey, I actually seen him, I actually know him, and now he's such and such and such. And that's my goal, to inspire folks that you can do whatever you dream, and you just have to keep at it.
Listen, I think, speaking of keeping at it, I think there was a time when you were at the very peak of your career. You had movie producers, you had off-Broadway performances, you had music executives come and saying, we wanted to give you contracts. You thought you were there after years and years of hustling in the street. You thought you finally made it. And what happened just as you were at the pinnacle of your career? What decision did you make that had a really negative effect on your career?
Well, I'd like to say pride and me chasing like money and not having patience. Like, for example, I was given the opportunity to get into the school of the School of Dance, and that's where I had the partnership with Alvin Ailey. They took me out of regular high school and put me into a dance school. And like I said, at the time, I was supporting myself by selling candy. And candy just kind of wasn't really working out for me. And at the time, my father was like, I'm going to live down south. You're pretty much, you know, supporting yourself. I'll catch you later. And I was like, all right, so I'll catch you later. And so I wanted to, you know, make more money. And I had read The Magic of Big Thinking. And it just enhanced my thinking and my education. And I was like, you know what, this one box, two box, four boxes, eight boxes is not doing anything for me. So I was just an extremist with, like, I need to make something over with myself overnight. Like, the resources are not where I want them to be, and it's not enough. So I started hanging out with the wrong crowd in my neighborhood and was like, hey, you know, can I crash with you guys? I don't want to stay in the shelter. I don't have anywhere to stay. I'll do anything. And they were like, sure, you know, here, we're going to give you these narcotics and so on and so forth, and you'll be able to make some money and take that money and sell some candy and have a place to stay for the time being. And that was my plan, and it didn't go that way at all, because I sold to a cop, and the next thing you know, in 72 hours, my career as a block boy was ended. And it just kind of, I was sitting up on Rikers Island, and it just
Let me stop. So you sold drugs. How long was your drug career?
3 days.
Three days. Yep. And you found yourself where, and how did it negatively impact your career?
Well, I had scholarships to go to Columbia University, and I was in Ailey. I was in Dance Theater of Harlem, and I was also working with a dance company out in Jersey, an African, Afro-Caribbean company. So when I had to sit up and do my time, I lost opportunities. I lost the scholarships that I had because I had to do my time. It just set me back. It set me back. It put my dance career just at a standstill, at a halt. Like, and then that's when, you know, I started dancing on the train. Like I at the time, it set my kung fu back. It set my dance back. It set my education. It set a lot of things back. I was forced to see everything happens for a reason. The circumstances that I thought at the time was traumatic, and I was like, why God? Why is this happening to me? Why is it happening to me? After I would live and get through it, I found out that it could have been worse, in that having those rainy days and those tribulations gave me that push. It took pressure. Like they say, pressure makes diamonds, literally. Had I not had those strains and that pressure and those experiences and that sweat, that blood, those tears, I wouldn't be the individual who I am today. I had a lot of things handed to me as I thought. Maybe not so much, but I guess I had it going really easy for me, because I had a lot of intelligence, and I just had, you know, the opportunity to just make money when I wanted to. And I took advantage of that. And I wouldn't save. I didn't deal with a lot of people. I didn't give as I could have been given to my family and to the friends. I was just, man, too much power or too much resources. Without the experiences and the wisdom, it could be detrimental to a person. So it took me those tribulations to understand that like I wasn't supposed to give up. There was a reason for those circumstances. Like it was like punishment. Like when, you know, you getting in trouble, like some of us get away with God knows what, and we think we're getting away with it, but no, the universe, God, karma, like no man, no human can get away. Like we always, you know, what it's like they say, what goes around comes around. What you put out, you get back. And ever since I stopped putting that kind of energy and that kind of, you know, negative and just being impatient, I've been, man, it's just been a blessing. It's been a blessing. I don't, you know, I know I'm a child of God, because I don't even get time. As I said, my career as a drug dealer was 3 days. Next thing you know, I'm in Rikers Island, and the other inmates are laughing at me because they're like, yo, you sell candy. You're not even a drug dealer. What do you do? Everyone couldn't believe my story, even in there.
Now, walk me through. So you get out of jail. You finish doing your time. And you're not saying, why me? You're saying, thank you, Lord, for this opportunity to change my life. Now you've gone on to do plays. You've gone on to perform all over the world. Before we end this segment, for those who have never experienced denial like you have, those who've never almost been homeless like you have, what encouraging words do you have to say to leave with those listeners to say, listen, it doesn't make a difference whether they believe in you or not. You have to believe in you.
That's a fact. I do believe that we all have a purpose. I don't just believe. I see. I know. I've experienced it. Every individual that I've met in my life, even up till today, to this moment, like it's for us to grow. It's for us to be inspired. It's not for us to live in the downside of yesterday.
Listen, when you perform, what is the first song you typically open up with and why?
One of my favorites is I Love You for Sentimental Reasons by Nat King Cole.
I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I'll give you my heart. I love you, and you alone were meant for me. Please give your loving heart to me and say we'll never part.
If people want to book you, Marquise, where can they find you? And what type of engagement are you open to? How far will you travel?
We're international. We're taking this international. There is no place. I mean, unless it's Mars or Pluto. Yeah, we're definitely international. And you can reach me directly at my Hawaiian number, 808-367-7027. That's 808-367-7027. And my email is MarkQuiese. One word, Marquise, MarkQuiese at yahoo.com.
Listen, thank you so much for coming into the No More Broke Excuse Zone. Thank you for inspiring our millions of listeners. And if you can take us out with one of your favorite songs, Ain't Too Proud to Beg, we would absolutely love you for it.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg and plead for your sympathy, I don't mind because you mean that much to me. Ain't too proud to beg, please, darling. Please don't leave me, girl. Don't you go. Ain't too proud to plead, baby, baby. Please don't leave me, girl. Don't you go.
Woo! Listen, Marquise, thank you so much. I think we are I think we can go far together. With your singing and my snapping, there's no limit.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
You for coming in to the No More Broke Excuse Zone. Thank you for inspiring our listeners. We are jealous that we are not in Hawaii, but you have brightened and warmed our hearts on this Christmas holiday.
Edward, thank you so much, man, for having me, man. I really appreciate you giving me this platform. I just want to give the whole city just a big, you know, hug. Man, I am New York, and we're going to, you know, push that to the whole world. Like, that's the goal, to just spread that Big Apple love and just follow your dreams.
Follow your dream. On that note, thank you. God bless you, and Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you for tuning in to Cash Flowin' Comedy, the No More Broke Excuse radio show. We laughed, we joked, but more importantly, I prayed you were inspired to eliminate excuses and birth your dream to buy a hotel, create a billion-dollar app, or simply improve your credit. Until we meet again, I invite you to follow us at VishaniRadio.com. Then check out TheFundingGuy.com, where you'll find our witty books on wealth, like The Art of the Flip, It's Money in the Bank, and Business Credit Made Ridiculously Simple. I pray they'll keep you laughing out loud all the way to the bank.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to VishaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
VishaniRadio.com is global. You can listen on any computer or mobile device that connects to the internet. Simply go to VishaniRadio.com and click on the show you would like to hear. Then sit back and enjoy yourself with powerful and positive talk radio. VishaniRadio.com, New York City. Always talking about everything.